3 hour quake, you're probably in the bottom of the chin here.
Okay,
on the northbound access. Just right at the light.
Copy, Carl, what's the altitude? I think we can set it up again.
If you like what you hear, go to ganglandwire.com. We need you to put a hit out on a donate button. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/ganglandwire. Follow true crime storyteller Gary Jenkins on Twitter at JinxLaw. Buy the DVD Gangland Wire or download the Kansas City Mob Tour app. And now, here's Gary Jenkins.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Here I am, your host, Gary Jenkins, as was just introduced. I'm here in the deep, dark confines of the Big Dumb Fun Show at Studio 4 with my friend, Aaron. Say hello, Aaron.
Hello, Aaron.
You know, this is the second of a two-parter about Nick Savella's counterpart, mob boss Joseph Joey Doves Iupa. Now, last time we talked about his early days and his upcoming when he was a young Capone mobster and what he was involved in. And it was kind of interesting about him. He seemed to be the Chicago mob's liaison with the Midwest bank robbers like John Dillinger and Babyface Nelson and those kinds of people. By the FBI reported they got him guns and had hideouts, and you know he took a piece of the action every time he did that. And he brought a doctor down to I think it was Aurora, Illinois, out of Chicago, or maybe out of Cicero. Aurora is a neighboring suburb of Cicero, actually, but he brought a mob doctor out to try to treat a guy named John Hamilton, who had been killed in a shootout with FBI agents, along with Dillinger had been in and gotten away.
Well, actually, he hadn't been killed. He got wounded. Gun battle up at the...
I misspoke.
What was the name of that lodge?
Little Bohemia Lodge in Wisconsin, just north of Chicago. There were several lodges for Chicagoans to go up and summer in up along Lake Michigan there.
And they could lay low here at this particular one, but they were ratted out.
They were ratted out by the lodge owner.
By his wife.
Yeah. I think he probably knew she was doing it. He probably sent her to do it.
I wonder whatever happened to them. Did they, if there's any retribution?
Best I can tell, you know.
I know, because
by the end of the summer, Dillinger was dead.
Yeah, so there were probably not a lot of... Well, and Babyface Nelson died not long thereafter.
Within the year, he died. Both of them died, and the other two died, too. John Hamilton for sure died. That Homer Van Meter and Tommy Carroll. Tommy Carroll, I believe, died up there in the shootout. And that Homer Van Meter, I don't know what happened to him, but I think he may have been the one that died with... Babyface Nelson. He may have been Babyface Nelson's buddy. I can't remember exactly. But be that as it may, that's kind of where we were. And he used the moniker Joey O'Brien. Now, I say that because a moniker is kind of important, because he became known as Joey Doves. And he's like famous all over the United States. If a lot of people, if you say Joey Doves, they may not know his real name, but they'd say, oh, yeah, he's a famous mobster, isn't he? Now, how did he get the nickname Joey Doves from Joey O'Brien?
Well, in the last episode, you said he had used the name O'Brien. It was kind of his own moniker.
Yeah, he may give it to himself, but a lot of people called him that.
Was a boxer?
He's a boxer. He was a welterweight boxer in his youth, and he took on that name because what he told the FBI was because he could get more fights with an Irish name than he could an Italian name. But he also used it, you know, like in official police reports and stuff. He was always telling policemen his name was Joey O'Brien. And, you know, that was back in the day before driver's licenses and IDs and computers. And they barely had fingerprints back then. And so it'd be easy to, you know, slick your way out of something by people may know Joey Iupa, but Joey O'Brien, you know, who knows him?
Yeah, hard to check ID if they don't really have that kind of stuff.
Plus, there was more prejudice against the policemen were all Irish. And there would be prejudice against Italians anyhow. But if you were Irish, you'd probably get away a little bit more if you were with an Irish policeman, more than likely, if I know human nature. Here we are with... how did he get the nickname Joey Doves? Now, we're going to skip forward. I'm not going to really go into his upbringing during the later 30s and during the war, probably the same as most of them. But by 1962, to tell this story about how he got the nickname Joey Doves, the early FBI files have several mentions, even all the way back into the 30s, about how he loved to hunt. And one time, the Bureau reports he was caught. He was stopped by a policeman, and he had two handguns and a .30-30 rifle in his car. And he was asked why he had these guns, and he said he was going pheasant hunting. Now, he did like to go pheasant hunting, and the Bureau knew that. But, you know, you don't hunt pheasants with those kinds of guns. You hunt pheasants with a shotgun, handguns, and 30-30 rifles.
You have to be out, a really good, you know, marksman.
Right. With handguns, you go shoot
pheasant
people.
Flying up off of the...
Yeah. Maybe he did practice quick draws. If a pheasant would fly up, he'd do a quick draw and blow it out of the air. Maybe he was that good, but I doubt it. But the Bureau, they had sources that said he had several bird hunting type dogs at his house, and he had several shotguns in his home also, and that indicates he really was a bird hunter, and we're going to find out he was. During 1962, Iuppa was living at number 4 Yorkshire Woods, Elmhurst, Illinois, and if you get on Google Maps, you'll find this is still a nice, large suburban home with a circular drive that set back from the street quite a little bit. It looks like a pretty nice place.
But you don't know if it's actually owned by any Iuppas.
You know, I don't know. I didn't go try to go
do
to the property records, but do a title search. No. But, you know, who knows? I may end up doing a Chicago section of my Kansas City mob tour.
For the app.
September 20th, 1962, the FBI had a source, and this is right from FBI files, that said Iuppa and some others were going to the Pittsburgh, Frontenac, Kansas area. Now, that's in the southeast part of the state, just directly across the state line from Joplin. There's a college down there, Pittsburgh State College. And
it's about, 60 miles, 70 miles south of Kansas City?
Oh, no, it's further than that. It's almost the Oklahoma state line. It's
you're in the Frontenac.
Frontenac.
Because I always think of Pittsburgh as the city where the university is at.
Right, right. And Frontenac's a neighboring small town. It's okay. Just a smaller town. So I just call it the Pittsburgh Frontenac area. And actually, most of all the activity that we're going to talk about was in Frontenac. So
now, was that known as an area that people would go dove hunting? Or, of course, you're looking at reports and stuff. It just seems...
Well, more than likely. I mean, it's out in rural Kansas. You know, if you like to hunt, why, it probably was. I mean, Joey Iuppa thought it was a good place to go, and we'll find out it was a good place to go because he had a lot of doves. Anyhow, so the FBI finds out that he's going down there, and they want to check on that. And the source says that they were going to be met by a Kansas City hoodlum with extensive knowledge of this area. The Bureau went down there, and I think they had a resident agent out of Springfield. They sent him over. A resident agent means there's like a small office with maybe one or two agents in a small city like Springfield. It would be bigger now, but back then there would have been like one person in that office. Right? You know, they have them in a lot of mid-sized cities. There's maybe one, and St. Joe may be close enough to Kansas City. They don't have one, but probably Topeka may have
a resident
agency.
Because they're federal, they wouldn't have a problem crossing state lines for enforcement.
Right.
I mean, work in a region.
Yeah. They were just going over. Really, they were on an intelligence gathering operation is what they were on to find out what he was doing down there and who he knew. Because, you know, when you get a big time, by then, 1960s, he's a pretty well-known Chicago mob guy. Capone's dad, Anthony Accardo, Joe Batters, or the Big Tuna, is now the boss, has been the boss for quite a while. And Iuppa is pretty much right under him. I'd say Iuppa was probably the underboss by 1962 in Chicago. And they just wanted to find out what he was doing down there and who this Kansas City hoodlum was that he was supposed to meet and introduce him around the area. I've had several people come to me after programs I've done about the mob that said, well, what about all the mobsters down around Pittsburgh? And I go, you know, I don't know. I know Joey. I didn't know Joey Iuppa had been hunting down there, and that's where he got the nickname Joey Doves. I start checking into this. Why did he select this area?
Yeah, what was the connection?
The resident agent checked, and he found out there was a Mr. and Mrs. Iuppa staying at the 69 Motel in Pittsburgh. And I would imagine 69 Highway goes right through Pittsburgh because it goes all the way down through Oklahoma and Dallas, Texas, actually. Of course, they didn't really go into detail in the FBI report. They soon learned that a John A. Garletti and a Ray Palooka were their local contacts. And Garletti had a sporting goods store in Pittsburgh, and Ray Palooka owned a dairy store in Frontenac. So they continued to monitor it, and after about 10 days, this was September the 20th, and after about 10 days, the dove hunt was ended.
Now, when you say they continued to monitor this, they continued to kind of observe him and watch.
Right, and they developed some sources down there. Probably had, I think they had a Kansas gaming agent. Right, and got a couple of sources down in the Frontenac area, and one of them was an informant, and they report him as an informant, and he told the bureau that IUPA had over 500 doves that had been dressed and frozen and were inside plastic packaging at Ray Palooka's dairy store in Frontenac. They all know that you can't have 500 doves. You know, the limit was 24 at the time. So there's two stories, and I still haven't quite verified either one yet. Now, one is that, and I found this in the old FBI files, which is kind of interesting that now I've got another story from another FBI agent. But the old FBI files that the Kansas gaming agent set a surveillance on IUPA. And they were gonna stop him and catch him with these 500 doves in his trunk, because they knew that they'd been loaded in his trunk and he was getting ready to leave for Chicago. They probably just got scared and didn't want anything to do with it, and conveniently looked the other way.
Realized who he was. Maybe it was better to let him get away.
Exactly. Or they were just dogged it off and got drunk, or you know, went back to the store to get coffee and didn't really pay attention. I've seen a lot of this kind of stuff. I can tell you a few stories about policemen being put on a job like this and then dug it off and then not seeing what they need to see.
Are we talking at this point? They're, you know, officers covering him, and they're in Frontenac or Pittsburgh. Both.
It's
really
in Frontenac. This would be in Pittsburgh. Little, this would be at the hotel.
Like such a tiny little town.
Oh yeah,
that you would notice the one car or two cars from Illinois that you knew what they looked like. Yeah. Driving by.
Right, right. So he leaves the area. This first story, he goes ahead and leaves the area on October 1st. Well, the Bureau finds out that he's gotten away, and they get a federal gaming agent named Joseph Hopkins, who goes up to IUPA's Elmhurst home and just waits for him. That evening, he gets there, and he approaches IUPA and says, "I'd like to look inside your trunk." And IUPA report, here's what the FBI agent, the report actually said. It's kind of interesting. IUPA reportedly replied, "I have to think about that." And Hopkins said, he testified later on that IUPA took so long to think about it that Hopkins just took the keys away from IUPA and opened the trunk and took out the 500 dead doves. Of course, that was there were six appeals on this little thing. Bill Owsley says it's like Nick Savella. They will appeal everything. They will fight to the bitter end on everything. And because he was looking at, you know, maybe a short term in jail and a county jail and a fine being over the limit.
When Joseph Hopkins shows up at his home.
Yeah.
And they drive in that night, and he obviously had to show him his badge. And he still was like a federal game and parks commission agent.
Right.
Not like an FBI agent.
Right.
Probably not armed.
Probably not. But, you know, a guy like that's not going to do anything out in front of his house. He's going to, he's just going to play dumb and not comply with what you want is what they'll do.
Yeah. And so he just thought about it. I'm looking here just on Wikipedia for Joey IUPA. And it said, actually, the agent can searching IUPA's car discovered 563 frozen doves. I don't know if that's, but that's, you have to actually stop and then count all the doves.
Well, they took them into custody and counted them there because they were evidence. They were then taking pictures of them, and when he went to trial.
Put them in an evidence locker? Here's 500 dead carcasses of doves.
Yeah, that's exactly what you do. You probably go rent a locker somewhere.
You have to keep it frozen, don't you?
You have to keep it frozen, yeah. That's probably exactly what they did.
All the way through all the appeals, because you couldn't throw away any of the evidence.
Well, you know what? I know what they've done in modern times, and more than likely they did this. They took pictures of them, and then they had somebody that could testify that, because of the material that we have for the court's purposes, I can testify this is a true and accurate depiction of the 500 doves that were taken from Joey IUPA's car. And I think you're getting on to how you got the moniker Joey Doves. You know, and there's a second story was that the FBI agent out of Springfield and Kansas gaming agent stopped him in Kansas and recovered the doves down there and took his shotguns. And so I don't know.
But either way, he was
either way,
with a federal crime.
He was charged with a.
And the records that you were looking at weren't clear as
they weren't
to
clear.
Where the charges came up from. Wouldn't you think they would?
Well, one was real clear. The other one is a story from an FBI agent that, and so a personal story. I think it probably is the first story because that was in the official FBI documents. Anyhow, he fights this for 6 years. 6 years going back and forth. He ends up with a 3-month jail sentence and a county jail and a $1,000 fine, but he will forever be known as Joey Doves. If you want to find out about this, they've got one of the appeals online. You can run Joseph Iupa and Doves, and you can probably find the document where the judge made the final ruling on whether it was an illegal search or not.
After all of the appeal.
Right.
Well, and it's interesting here in your notes, you say Iupa's first defense was the birds inside were crows.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
And then they tried to also exclude the birds because of an illegal search.
Yeah.
When the agent met him at his home, he didn't have a warrant.
He didn't have a warrant, no. He just took his keys and went in his car.
Which is an illegal search.
Well, you know,
except for the evidence.
In 1962, it was a little bit different because here was the thinking. I know when I came on the police department in 71, here was the thinking was if you had some kind of probable cause and exigent circumstances and it was a car, you have greater leeway to search because a car is so movable that a car can go to another jurisdiction before you can do anything.
Before you can get a warrant.
Right. So there's some kind of the loopholes in the Fourth Amendment right to search and seizure and without a warrant. There's always some loopholes in that and exigent circumstances and the fact that a car is transportable. See, a house can't go anywhere.
Yeah.
So you can wait and take time and get a warrant for a house. But a car can't.
They didn't want to wait till he got the birds in the house.
No.
I mean, if Joey would have been smart, it would have been funny if he would have stopped somewhere in Chicago along the way
and dumped him off. Yeah, they wouldn't have the
maybe
birds.
Maybe at his club and...
Because I'm sure they Cicero. Weren't following him all the way. I have to wonder, do you think he was taking those up to, I mean, was he going to, like, use them in a restaurant or somebody going to?
I'm kind of curious. Did he, maybe, you know, did they took the time. He didn't, if he shot 500 and they were all prepared
and took
and
the
dressed.
Time, yeah, to be wrapped in plastic and frozen and dressed out. I mean, who'd want to eat that much dove?
He was like
every
a Game
year.
Fish and Parks booster.
Really? I don't know.
He didn't actually dress the birds. They probably got somebody else to do that.
Right,
work.
This Ray Palooka, I'm sure, at
yeah,
that store. And you know,
Ray was doing it because it was Joey Iupa.
Right, I mean, or he just paid him. He probably just paid him to do it. But we'll get onto that in a little bit. That's another story.
But this seems like a pretty good, at this time, he's the head. No,
he's probably the underboss.
Underboss
under,
in Chicago.
Tony Accardo.
And they gave him a $1,000 fine and 3 months in jail.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was a gaming violation. It wasn't exactly an armed robbery or a burglary or.
They couldn't see. That's what they're calling serving some hard time.
Yes. It was just what do you call like messing with the dude?
do you know where they ended up? Did it say in the report at all where in his conviction where they sent him?
It was a county jail. They might have taken him right back down to that county, but I don't know that for a fact. It did not say. And I didn't dig into it far enough. It would be tough one to find if it wasn't in those FBI files. Outside of that, it would be hard to find. But anyhow, the natural question for me was, and as I said before, I've had people come up to me going, well, what about the mob? Those mobsters down in the Pittsburgh, Kansas area? And I'm going, well, I don't know. I had a guy get hold of me as I did a little blog piece. Those of you who subscribe to my blog, I did a little blog piece on this that, If you subscribe to my website, you'll get a notice in your email every time I do something, which I know I don't do a lot, and you don't get any advertising or anything, but I'll do a little interesting little written piece every once in a while, as well as the podcast come out in email, too. You get a notice on that. And, you know, I'm always trying to build my email list, like everybody that does anything like this. But I got a guy got a hold of me when he heard I was thinking of looking at this issue, and his mother... grew up in the Frontenac area. And so he started telling me some things. And, you know, I had this question about how does a Chicago mob boss have so many, know so many people in a rural town like Frontenac?
Seems like a long way to go hunt doves when
and
you
that
go
too.
Out into Illinois and the
right.
countryside.
There'd have to be something out in the suburbs of Illinois and Wisconsin and I mean, suburbs of country. I mean, Illinois or Iowa, even Iowa's only a few hours from home, but he went clear down to Pittsburgh. You know, I learned two things from a couple of different people. And one thing I learned was Bill Owsley actually kind of looked at the people of the Pittsburgh Frontenac area and where did they come from? And he found out that during the turn of the century, there's a lot of coal mines down that area, and they strip mined a lot. There's still the empty strip mines, or people go fishing to the strip mines down in southwestern part of the state and southeastern part of Pittsburgh, and there's a strip mining coal shovel down there that you can take a tour of called Big Bertha, and it's like big as this building here that we're in. I mean, it's huge. It's I did it once. I just paid the $5 and went, and you crawl up in it, and it's just immense. So if you ever go down to Pittsburgh, Kansas area, look for the signs to the Big Bertha site, and you can go crawl up in Big Bertha. But anyhow, there's all these coal mines, and at that point in time, in the turn of the century, there's a large number of Italian immigrants coming in. That's when they were coming in. That was, the Irish had already come in around the Civil War, and around the turn of the century, a lot of Italians and Sicilians, and particularly Southern Italians, Sicilians came in, and because of, economic situations over there, and so they moved to the Pittsburgh area to work in the mines. And with any large mining operation, there's a lot of young men, and young men, they all have a desire for what? Booze, gambling, and girls. Now, what does a mob like to provide? What do they like to support?
And exploit.
Gambling, and girls. And so, of course, these newly arrived Sicilian immigrants brought the old mafia codes with them. I would say that's kind of how it got started.
So you think some Sicilians settled in the area?
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it as part of that. And started looking for the opportunities outside of working in the coal mines and how you could make money doing that. Somehow, probably because of Prohibition, more than likely, it's kind of a central location, in the southeast part of the state. Bill Owsley says there was a kind of a triangle of a route of to bring the booze comes down out of the good booze comes down out of Canada, down through Chicago, down through Kansas City, as he explained in one of our earlier podcasts, that they set up the routes and they came down to Kansas City. And so another route would been to go on down to Pittsburgh and then back up to Wichita, because those would be two places that would be pretty decent sized markets. And Springfield's pretty close down there for the illegal booze. There had been speakeasies down there. And obviously,
and they'd have to set up kind of places along the way where they would either have a distribution for
right.
it, or
so they get to Pittsburgh and they find a resident population of Sicilians who already are looking to get out of the mining business and looking to score. I mean, I'm kind of doing a little supposition here, but that's the best story I can figure out. And this guy that got hold of me, I told him that, and he said, to him, that sounded logical. His mom grew up there, and she said that she remembered working in in Frontenac. She worked in a place called Bartow's Idle Hour Steakhouse and Lounge at 201 South Santa Fe, Frontenac, and it's still there. She had often served Joey Iupa because he kept coming back hunting there. He didn't quit going down there hunting. He kept coming back.
For 3 months he didn't come down.
Well, he had a little 3 months bit to do in jail, but he did continue to come back down there and go hunting, and he had...
And what's the name of the place that he would go?
It was the Bartow's, Bartos, Idle Hour Steakhouse and Lounge.
All right, and you have to put that into your app.
I haven't put that in my app. I don't know if I will. I might someday.
It's a little further south of Kansas City.
Yeah.
But, you can tie all these things together. Now, there was these guys that were actually like Ray Palooka.
Who was driving him around.
Yeah, and what about whatever happened with Ray?
Ray had, today, to this date, this guy also told me there is a Palooka's Meat and Deli on the main drag down in
Pittsburgh?
Pittsburgh, and in Frontenac. In Frontenac. And I thought I had the address on that, but I don't have that written. I didn't make a note of that. But it's that you can find it. You can go online and Google Palooka's Meat and Deli, and you'll find a picture of the front of it and the address and everything.
There in Frontenac. And what about the other guy, John A. Garizetti?
You know, I looked that name up and looked like Garizetti. Maybe he had a son. That's such an unusual name. There's a lawyer who became a judge who died recently who would be about like that guy's son. And so it was just a well-known name. Now, this guy's mom said Dickie, a guy named Dickie Palooka, who died recently, used to drive Iupa around when he was down there. But he was really close to these Paloukas for some reason. The original court case had Ray Palooka as a guy who dressed and wrapped and froze the doves for him. So they may be brothers, or it could be his son,
a relative there somehow.
Bill, when he went down there, he said he tried to ask questions of the older residents down there, and he said they're still real close-mouthed about it. He said he tried to tell this one old guy, he said it was obvious a guy knew all the people he was talking about and trying to find out about, and he said, I told him, I said, you know, this has been, you know, what, 50, 60 years? I mean, these guys are all dead. I'm just doing a little history here. And he said they just would not talk to him at all. I told him it was probably because of his New York accent. But
well, I mean, he shows up and starts asking questions. He's from out of town.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it couldn't be much better, I would think, than the guys like the FBI agents coming up out of Springfield.
Yeah.
Trying to kind of,
they'd be better
spitball intelligence on when the guy was there.
They would be more likely, because they live down in Springfield, and they would probably have some mutual, you know, acquaintances. Well, that's the story of how Joseph Iupa, mob boss of Chicago, went from the moniker of Joey O'Brien to Joey Doves, and everybody in this country knows him by Joey Doves today.
Here, I was looking on Wikipedia for Joseph Iupa. It says that it was under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act of 1918 that it's illegal to possess more than 24 doves per person outside of hunting season. And here it says, in September of 62, as part of Robert Kennedy's crackdown on the Chicago outfit, FBI agents in Kansas searched Iupa's car, discovering 563 frozen doves. Prior to this conviction, Iupa was never referred to as Doves. He was known for almost 40 years as O'Brien or Joey O, as this nickname started as his boxing name, Joey O'Brien.
I never heard that Joey O before, but
there was a Wikipedia where Joseph John Iupa, born December 1st of 1907, died February 22nd, 1997. So he had a good long life there.
He did, and that would be him. He was my boss.
Also known as Doves, Morning Doves, O'Brien, or Joey Doves, and was the Chicago mobster who became a leader of the Chicago outfit from 71 until his federal conviction in 1986.
Convicted along with Tuffy DeLuna and Carl Corky Savella and Jackie Cerrone and Angelo LaPietra and Frank Ballesteri and Macy Rockman for skimming money from Las Vegas casinos. He is Remo Gaggi in the casino movie.
In the movie Casino.
Yes.
He's Remo Gaggi.
Remo Gaggi. G-A-G-G-I.
Now, what is this? Oh, yeah, Bartle's Idle Hour Steakhouse and Lounge. That was in the report, or that was just an aside? That
was what this guy told me, that his mother used to serve
Joey Doves.
And she was a waitress there, and he'd go down there to eat, and she'd serve him there. You know, a small town like that, everybody in the town knew.
Everyone knew each other. Do you think there a lot of times they would maybe, if they were having meetings rather than meet here in Kansas City, where, you know, people like Nick Savella was known to, you know, be under, you know, federal surveillance.
Yeah.
Do you think they would go down to those areas instead?
Oh.
Just because they were more rural, and when you're out there, it's harder to follow people.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true. If, you know, like the 1957, the 1957 convention in Appalachian, New York, it was way out in the country, and that actually worked against them. There were so many of them, it was really noticeable. But, you know, my experience is, and what's been, you know, determined by actual surveillance and wiretaps and good informants, was if they, and they are concerned about having meetings out of the way, and just like that one up at Shiobola's house in Chicago, they try to get a place that doesn't have a history to it. The Josephine Marlowe house up by Nick Savella's house is one of the best examples of that. See, the one in Chicago, Shiobola, that was a policeman's house. Josephine Marlowe was nobody. She was just a neighbor of Savella's, and then he could just walk through some backyards and get to her house, and he wasn't connected to her. They hadn't been on his telephone and on the telephone
they,
at the.
But she knew they were coming over there to meet.
Sure. Oh, yeah. She knew it, but she wasn't going to tell anybody.
No.
But if they hadn't been on the phone down Quinton Peoples at the law office, they would have never known that that meeting happened.
On.
Right. And or they might have known there was going to be a meeting, but they'd never known where it was. So they wouldn't have been able to get a bug in it. So they try to pick a place. If it's an important meeting, they'll try to pick a place that seems safe to them that they can talk in. But to go to a long distance and make that kind of effort in especially a rural area, I kind of doubt it.
Joey, the Dove's history in coming up before he was the boss and,
yeah.
and getting involved in trucking and certainly in the era of prohibition.
Right. You need a truck. You need these small truck lines to truck the booze around.
He probably was an avid hunter even back then.
Oh, yeah.
He had his 30-30 and some handguns when he was pulled over.
He did have bird guns, bird dogs, and he wasn't as. And that's a fact. He was an avid hunter all his life.
Actually, had bird dogs as well.
Yeah, he did. He did. Now that after they passed those laws about convicted felons with guns, he probably had to quit. Just like Willie Comisano Jr. here in Kansas City today, he'd love to go hunting. He's a big hunter. But they passed that law that you can't have a gun if you're a convicted felon. And so they took his gun rights away from him. Maybe the gun rights people will get that back for him one of these days.
Do you think even in that case, because it was from the Game Fish and Parks, it's still a federal offense?
Yeah, it was a federal offense. It was a federal law.
Case against him that he broke,
right.
Yeah. Well, and so I'm looking here, just from Wikipedia here, it says, in 86, he was convicted of the skim. From Las Vegas casinos, received 28 years in prison. January 19th of 1996, Iopa was released from the U.S. Bureau of Prisons Federal Medical Facility at Rochester, Minnesota. And on the 22nd of February 1997, Joey Iopa died of natural causes at the Elmhurst Memorial Hospital in Elmhurst, Illinois.
He never got too far from Cicero, Elmhurst, or Melrose Park.
He was buried at the Queen of Heaven's Catholic Cemetery in Hillsdale, Illinois. I wonder if that's on that grave site.
He'd be in the Find the Grave site.
That'd be another one of those great mob tour app locations yeah. is the burial site of Joey Dove's Iupa.
Yeah, it would. If you have a friend, a relative, or if you yourself think you have a problem with sex, drugs, and rock and roll, as we used to say back in the day, or with drugs or alcohol. Or
you know somebody who does.
Or you know somebody that does, why, make first call your first call.
You can call them at 816-361-5900. They have a 24/7 crisis hotline.
All right. Thanks, Aaron.
Thank you, Gary. Also, remember, download the Kansas City Mob Tour app. Frequently updated.
Right.
Never out of date with information.
Yeah, I need to put some more updates. I made that map for my blog, my website, but I need to... Actually, those are some updates I could put in there because I did the grave sites, and I didn't do the grave sites in the app, I don't believe, of Carkey and
the
Nick
folks that
and
live
Tuffy.
Here and are buried here.
Right.
Yeah, those
right.
are some... That's one cemetery
that's
we talked about.
Yeah, several people are buried there at 22nd and what, a 2201 Spruce, I think. I can't think of the name of it now, but... Corky's not married there. He's buried way out south. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Huh. I think an interesting episode almost would be to go out there and tell a little bit about him and do their actual gravesite. Kind of live, and instead of in the studio.
A live remote.
In the cemetery.
From the cemetery, from the mob cemetery.
You think the guys from Generation Y would get behind something like that?
I don't know. Hey, you guys, what do you think about that? Let's go to a mob cemetery
we'll have a meetup.
Live remote and do a meetup out there.
And we'll talk about
that. All right. Good night, Aaron.
Good night, Gary. I'd also like to give a shout out to... the band that we use for the bumper bed music, Odd-O-Matic, a great punk band that you can find online at oddomaticmusic.com.